You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
And welcome everyone to Rock M Radio. This is a brand new episode of Dive Cuts. We've been here for seven seasons. And of course, we're here to talk about your Missouri basketball Tigers. I am your host, Sam Snelling. With me on your right, if you're watching us on YouTube, is Matt Watkins, aka at Data Mizzou. If you are not following him on Twitter, do so. If you're not subscribed to this YouTube channel, please do so. You can hit the like button below. There's also a subscribe button right next to it. Please hit both. Unless it says unsubscribe, and don't do that. So Watkins, the last time that you were on the pod, we were coming off a loss. So what better way to have you on the podcast than by facing another loss? Actually, were you on? It was a couple weeks ago. They were coming off a win, right?
We had a Wichita State in the middle, but yes, I was on right after Jackson State.
Yeah. So
Harris shies away from those. He doesn't have.
Yeah, I think he's a little bit chicken. Is what it is.
He was on last week after Kansas, but only because Mizzou got a commitment several days later, so he felt safe coming back on.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, it's like there for the highs, not there for the lows. He is not a true son. Unlike the two of us who are here through thick and thin, right?
You know it.
And it's been a little thin. So it was a little thin on Sunday. It's Tuesday's December 19th. I realize like the rest of the Mizzou media world is talking about football and the transfer portal and recruiting and the Cotton Bowl and all these good things happening. And we're gonna sit here and we're gonna talk about Mizzou going to Kansas City and basically looking pretty bad for most of the game. They did kind of put together a run there to make it a little closer, but never fully threatened Seton Hall in the second half. You know, once Seton Hall kind of got their 19-point lead. It's disappointing. It's another sort of disappointing trip to Kansas City. So, Watkins, in your opinion, why do they keep going back there?
Well, I guess that's a good question. You know, I'm fighting upstream in this battle. I really, really don't like neutral site games in general. You know, if you follow me on Twitter, you've definitely seen me very skeptical of why teams go to half-empty arenas to play other big-name teams when you have these palaces built on campus for the purpose of hosting great basketball games. I think it was just this weekend when there was the four-team event down in Atlanta, and I shared a screenshot of Ohio State, and I believe it was UCLA playing in front of about 10 people. I mean, these are two big-name programs, the biggest, I wouldn't say in basketball, but the biggest names in college athletics, and they're playing in Atlanta, of all places. in front of no one. And I just, you know, there's always this conversation about, you know, could college basketball be better? Is it slipping? Whatever. I'm like, why don't we put these games in front of huge fan bases? We saw Kansas go to Indiana and the place was wild. You know, even last week, Mizzou went to Kansas. I don't enjoy going to Kansas, but I can't deny that when those two play each other at a neutral or at each other's gym, it's a huge event. And that's the case anytime a big name comes to campus. So, you know, that aside, Mizzou playing Seton Hall in Kansas City isn't exactly a big draw.
I think they said they had like 7,000 fans, which I'm not sure. Like I think you play Arkansas Pine Bluff and get more people in the door than 7,000.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of get it that we have a game every year in St. Louis, but I almost, you know, that is a neutral site game, but it's kind of an institution. It's, you know, it doesn't move around. It's been played one time, I believe, since the mid to late 80s outside of St. Louis, and that was during COVID.
Right.
You know, as a St. Louis resident, it's something on the sports calendar here, even if you're not really involved in either school, which obviously I am, but something people talk about. It's something people get up about.
You grew up on the west side of the state too. So like, you're not exactly like, you know, like born and bred, you know, grew up going to Bragging Rights.
I did not go to high school here, which perhaps is most important.
Guilty. But you know, like as you know, as somebody who did grow up here and grew up in St. Louis, you know, I do think it's really one of the few times a year when, you know, like even when Mizzou basketball is down, which has been, you know, a lot over like the last, you know, 25 years or whatever. Not, you know, maybe not a lot. Maybe that's being unfair, but more than we would care to admit. You know, the Bragging Rights game is still a huge draw. Even in Kim Anderson's years, and you know, like that was Kim Anderson versus like John Gross, and both programs are kind of struggling. You know, like it's still gonna get that place 80% full. It's gonna be a great atmosphere. Like it's gonna be loud when one of the teams goes on a run. You know, so if you make something like that, and like I think this is also, and I realize we're getting off Seton Hall, but I think this is I do feel like it's an important topic. You know, if Mizzou and Kansas played in Kansas City every year, and just said, you know, in perpetuity, we're going to play this game in Kansas City, like I feel like it would become kind of like that, and very quickly, where you know people would, you know, make sure that it's whatever the date is marked on their calendar. But I would much rather like have the game in fog in Mizzou Arena and actually play those types of games in those types of environments. I was actually, you know, the second you brought up neutral court, my first thought was UCLA and Ohio State, because like whatever you want to say, like UCLA is the biggest brand in West Coast college basketball. Ohio State is probably one of the three or four best brands in the Big Ten, which is a great basketball conference. And for like those two teams to like play each other in Atlanta, you know, like I almost like don't even mind. So like Baylor played Michigan State in Detroit. I don't love that. Like I'd rather they just go to Michigan State, go to East Lansing and play that game. But that's better than, like, what are you doing in Atlanta? Like, I mean, if you're a UCLA fan, are you really wanting to fly to Atlanta to watch your team play? Like, you know, and I've been to Atlanta. I like Atlanta. It's a lovely city, you know. But a mid-December trip to Atlanta just doesn't really seem like something that, you know, jumps off the page. So I'm with you. Like, I just, I know, like, Chip Kelly, I think, got a lot of sort of virtual pats on the back for his little rant on how to fix college football. And I think some of the truths that he speaks about college football also could translate to basketball. And that I think you need a central scheduling body, and you need somebody who's just going to take the softness that coaches have for home gates and wins and for neutral site games that won't hurt them in their NCAA tournament resume. Right. And just take those out of their hands, because that's the reason why we have all these MTEs. I do think MTEs should exist, but we need to probably cut it in at least half. And it needs to be organized by like conference, and they need to be like good teams. Like, if you won your conference last year, you get to go to an MTE or something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm convinced some of those are money laundering operations. You're just trying to take a loss to write some money off the books. I mean, you watch these places, and it's like they're smaller than. I mean, I went to a high school that had 50 kids in a class, and we had bigger crowds. In some of these games, you're just like, what? I mean, what are we doing here? You have a good product, and you're just taking this far away from the people who care about it as possible, and pricing everyone else out. Like, why are we doing?
Yeah, and I understand going to Maui. I understand going to the Bahamas. Like, these are all like, even like Charleston is kind of like a cool like MTE venue, but then like, I mean, are we really gonna do like Disney World? I'm sorry, like as somebody who, like, I went to the Wide World of Sports, which is like their big venue down there for like the Cardinals Braves spring training game. For anybody that doesn't know, I lived for I think a couple of years in like the St. Petersburg area, and each spring would watch the Cardinals in spring training, because it's like, honestly, like, if all baseball was like spring training baseball, like, I would probably be a lot more into it, where it's just like there's like 1500 people in the stands and it's just much smaller and more intimate. I just totally vibe on that. But
there are some major league fan bases like that, Sam.
Yeah.
If you went up on a bandwagon
where it's like 1500 people show up to watch them play. I believe they're moving to Las Vegas. So, but yeah, so kind of getting back to Seton Hall and neutral site courts. I will say that you could hear even in the days leading up to the game that Dennis knew what the gate was, and he was not real happy about it, because, you know, like, they're going to play on Friday night. They're going to play in St. Louis, and that building's going to be full. Both sides are going to sell their full allotment of tickets. And to go to Kansas City, like, he's basically saying, like, if we're going to come here, like, you guys need to buy tickets, and to not have them buy tickets, like, just play at home.
Yeah.
And I
don't think you're 100% right. I don't know that it's necessarily a Kansas City thing. It's a symptom of the bigger problem here. Like, if Mizzou tried to play Seton Hall in St. Louis and didn't have the Illinois game, it would probably be received about the same way. So it's not a St. Louis, Kansas City thing. It's just like, I get where he's coming from. I'm getting where the athletic department's coming from.
Well, if Mizzou and Seton Hall played in Madison Square Garden, how many people would show up?
Not many Mizzou fans. That's a hike.
Yeah, like, not many. And so, like, I mean, how many Seton Hall fans are you expecting to travel to Kansas City?
Yeah, I get why they're doing it. I just don't agree with it personally. You know, I'm sure there's financial underlying reasons, but, you know, if you're having 7,500 people show up, I'm not sure what the real upside is there.
Well, there's also like regional sports commissions that are involved,
right?
You know, that are working to get those kinds of games. But yeah, I agree. But getting to the actual, like, basketball product.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Now until May 12th, get up to 30% off personalized jewelry, style, decor, and so many other items mom will love. And if you want her to know you put a ton of thought into her present, use Gift Mode. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can easily find well-crafted, original, and affordable pieces from small shops. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about mom, and Gift Mode instantly gives you curated ideas based on hundreds of personas. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
We've avoided it for 12 minutes, so it's time to get into it.
Well, it's hard to talk about. When you have a Jackson State loss on your resume, this is not a game that you could really afford to lose. Like, you needed to really kind of be strong in this last three. And no one's going to blame you for losing in Fog Allen Arena. Certainly so far, Seton Hall has not given themselves a whole lot of runway to make the NCAA tournament. And it's almost like in the post game, Dennis Gates was calling Seton Hall tournament team, and it's like, well, I mean, technically they've been to the NCAA tournament in the past. They're not going this year. They might if they shoot the ball like they shot against Missouri, you get enough wins in the Big East, then you're probably going to be a tournament team. But what's the likelihood of that happening? And I think that's probably the most disappointing thing for me is the exact kind of game that Missouri really couldn't have Seton Hall play. So that's how Seton Hall played. They shot the ball off from the outside. They were able to get the ball into the rim, and they converted at the rim. And you give up, 90-plus points to a pretty mediocre offense. It makes it really, really difficult to win. And, even last year's Missouri team would have had a hard time scoring enough points to beat Seton Hall the way that they were playing. And certainly this year's team, they streaked a little bit down the stretch, but it wasn't even close to being enough.
Yeah, I had actually been toying around with the idea of writing about Mizzou's defense prior to Sunday, and how it had improved and some of the underlying metrics that were indicative of that it was going to be sustainable as they move forward. And then Sunday, credit to Seton Hall. They made shots they don't typically make. They also made shots they don't typically make that were contested, but they were 18 of 22 at the rim. 18 of 22. Mizzou was 19 of 23, I believe, at the free throw line, which a really good free throw shooting team shouldn't be shooting the same percentage as the opponent is at the rim. I mean, it was mind-boggling. What we had seen so far, there were little bits and pieces where Mizzou's defense struggled, notably in the, I believe it was the first half against South Carolina State, when they're just getting cut up and had to go to zone because they were not getting any stops whatsoever. And that was bad, but they turned it around. And for the most part since then, and several good examples of how they were performing well, you thought maybe that was the thing of the past, but man, Sunday was every way you could get beat defensively, Mizzou got beat. It was just start to finish, and the only reason why I think it maybe wasn't worse is because Mizzou started really hauling out for a full-on press, trying to get back in the game. Seton Hall had a turnover or two and missed a couple free throws. Otherwise, I would have no doubt that if Mizzou was playing straight up, that Seton Hall would push past 100 points. And it was a 70-possession game. It was just, you know, there was nothing the Tigers could do that were slowing down Seton Hall. And that was by far the most disappointing aspect of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they opened decently enough. You know, I thought I think this happens a lot where teams kind of come out and make a few shots maybe they don't normally make. You know, just sort of the adrenaline of the opening tip. And I feel like both teams kind of were doing that. They were, you know, trading some early baskets. But the way that Missouri came out, I was like, all right, like I'm really kind of like, I like the way that they're playing. Like they're kind of giving up a few open looks, but you really don't expect Seton Hall to continue to like connect on all those. Mm-hmm. You know, like was it Dylan Adewosu was 4 of 6 from deep. I mean, that guy shoots to the side, you know, like his whole body is cocked to one side. He kind of shoots like this, and you don't expect that guy to have a good night shooting most of the time. And yet he made that many. And really it was just him and Alamir Dawes, who I feel like should be on the scouting report as a guy who can hurt you from deep if he kind of gets going, because he's been that guy in the past. I mean, like Nick Honor played with him at Clemson. He should know his game pretty well. You know, he's still a guy, he got up 11 three-point attempts. It's just like a really kind of disappointing performance at a time where, you know, it's like I said, like you can't really afford to drop that game. You know, I'm never the kind of guy who likes to write teams off, you know, before you hit conference play. If you can put things together in conference play and make a run, you can do a lot. But I mean, Vanderbilt won 11 games in the SEC last year and got left out. And I don't know that Missouri has done enough, even if you beat Illinois, to go 11-7 and still think that you can be an NCAA tournament team.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much can happen between now and then. And, you know, I would guess if they hit 20 wins in the regular season, they're going to be pretty close. You know, looking at this year in, year out, the bubble teams are, you were just,
the bubble's always bad.
You're looking for reasons to put a team in. You know, there's all of those teams have tons of reasons why they shouldn't be in. You're looking for one thing to latch on to put them in. So with that in mind, you know, we were discussing this, Matt Harris and Sam and I were discussing that a couple weeks ago, that the Jackson State loss was very bad. It's very damaging to your resume. There's nothing you can do about it now except win games. And the thing that I was more concerned with was how they were playing, you know, and the last few weeks when they beat Wichita State, they beat Pittsburgh, and they even played competitive at Kansas. You're looking at this team and saying, okay, you know, whether they get there or not, they're on the right trajectory. Well, bring in last Sunday, and that kind of gets called into question again. You know, so it's kind of one step forward, two steps back, as that's kind of how the non-conference has gone. And, you know, there's plenty of opportunities to turn around. You know, there's nothing preventing Mizzou from going 20-0 the rest of the way. Whether that's likely, most likely not. But, you know, there's just so much that can happen between now and then with injuries, teams getting hot, teams going cold, that I don't really like to guess too much at this point. But stating where Mizzou is now, they've not done themselves many favors, despite having a couple of decent wins.
Well, if you want to be the optimist, the SEC has been largely disappointing. That includes a lot of teams that I think a lot of people thought were going to be, you know, like Final Four level contenders. I mean, Arkansas has slipped to 54th in KenPom. Kentucky's slipped a little bit to 21st. you know, Alabama can score the ball. But yeah, their biggest issue has been, you know, on the defensive end. Auburn surprised me. They played better than I thought they'd be, but they've still got a couple, not great losses on their schedule. Or I guess Baylor's not a terrible loss, but Appalachian State isn't great. You know, Florida's barely in the top 40. South Carolina's a hair under 70. Vanderbilt's turned out to be way worse than anybody thought. And Texas A&M has even struggled some. So, you know, it doesn't seem to me like there's a whole lot of, I don't know, there's a plethora of like deep talented teams in the SEC that just scare you and think that you can't beat them. You know, so, you know, if you do want to play the optimist, there are opportunities. I just don't know, you know, as I always try to be the realist, like, I just don't know how you look at this team and the way that they played, the consistency that they haven't found yet, and think that they can kind of go on that kind of run. I mean, I could see them, you know, getting to 9 or 10 wins, you know, but getting to 11 or you know, probably 12 would be required to get yourself back in the tournament race. I will say, stopping short of, you know, like, if they show up on Friday and beat the tar out of Illinois, then obviously, like, maybe you start to feel a little differently. But let's talk about Illinois.
Okay.
Because this is a winnable game. The things that Illinois are good at can scare you because they can score the ball, they shoot the ball well, and they don't really have a point guard, though. And as we saw last year, and Missouri is a different team than they were last year, but one of the things that they do try to do is speed teams up. And if you speed Illinois up, you know, they can turn the ball over. And I think that's kind of what your hope has to be, is they, you know, you kind of speed them up again, you get ahead, and you make them play catch up. They've been really good defensively, and with good reason. I mean, like, their lineup is deep and big. And, you know, it's almost like where the not having a point guard helps them, because your starting point guard is really like a wing. And so you start wing, combo forward center, and that's a lot of size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're a good team, and you know, I haven't dug into them a whole lot as we sit here, but I have watched them a couple times, and you know, Terrence Shannon's a very good player. I've always been I've always been intrigued with Coleman Hawkins. You know, he's a unique player. He's what, 6'10", can step out, stretch the floor. He can guard multiple positions defensively. They're a very good team. You know, it's just, when you look at bragging rights, it's none of it matters. You know, I was just looking at this last night. I'm not into sports betting, but out of the last 6 bragging rights games, the underdog has won 4 times outright. You know, it's just, who knows what's
going to happen. Thanks, Javon Pickett.
Javon Pickett and Kobe Brown. You know, there's guys that, not Kobe necessarily, but there's guys that step up in that game that don't traditionally do it. You know, the environment in what is it now? The Enterprise Center is pretty unique. You know, I believe it's the Enterprise Center now.
It used to I be think Savage, so, yeah. Century,
Kiel Center.
Kiel. if you're a true blooded St. Louis, then it's always Kiel, I think.
But the environment's just unique. You know, it is a true neutral site game, in that you're going to have a ton of Illinois fans there. You're going to have a ton of Mizzou fans there, and it's just nonstop cheering. You know, no matter who's winning the game, the building is loud. And if you're not used to that environment, if you've not played in that environment, it can be a little different. You know, it can be a little intimidating. So it's just weird how different teams react in that game. The last two games haven't been close. Mizzou won by, 22 last year, and I believe Illinois by 25 the year before, and neither of the games were that close. So it's just, you don't really know what's going to happen, and you can look at the matchups, and we, of course, will. But that game, more than any other, I just don't think it matters as much, if that makes sense. It's simply a matter of who comes out and makes shots. You know, and whoever gets that building going in their favor is going to roll to a victory. And it doesn't always happen in the first half, but usually you get a pretty good feel for who's coming to play.
Well, so the Illini, so Terrence Shannon is currently fourth in KenPom's MVP metric. On the season so far, he is behind PJ Hall, Kyle Filipowski, and a little guy from Purdue named Zach Edey. So basically, there's like a player of the year rating that KenPom kind of gives everybody, and Shannon has been that good. He's been
very good.
A guy who sort of stepped up and willed them to that sort of win over Florida Atlantic, which was a nice win, and I believe Madison Square Garden. Marcus Domask, who is a Southern Illinois transfer. He has not shot the ball well from outside to date, but he is really good in the mid-range. He's a crafty scorer. He's physical. You know, get to his spots. And Coleman Hawkins is a guy who also has not shot the ball well this year. Basically, Illinois has Shannon, who's shooting 41% from deep, Luke Goody, who is shooting 46% from deep, and then nobody else on the team is shooting anything worth a lick. I guess, you know, Justin Harmon's 5 of 14, so he's not attempting, you know, many threes. That's a just under 36%. Everybody else is kind of struggling to shoot, but they're not a team that that looks to do a whole lot more than what they're good at. Terrence Shannon has sort of free reign to get to the cup as much as he can. You know, Goody does like to stretch the floor, and that's pretty much what he is a spot-up guy. And they get to Domask in the mid-range and Hawkins to make plays, and Quincy Guerrier, who's is an Oregon transfer by
Syracuse.
Started at Syracuse and went to Oregon, and right. Now he's finishing up at Illinois. He's been kind of like a nice versatile defender for them. You know, like they really do not have anyone to handle the ball. They kind of approach it as a by committee thing. You know, they're more than happy to just sort of, you know, back people up the floor a little bit. And try to get into their sets that way. But they're still an efficient offense, basically because it's Shannon, it's Goody from deep, it's Domask in the mid-range, and, like, these guys aren't really doing anything that they're not supposed to be doing. The key for Missouri is you know, can they get the non-ball handlers to cough up the ball? And realistically, you know, for all of the things that they were good at defensively last year, we kind of thought this team would be better defensively, and they have been. But they're not really forcing a whole lot of turnovers. Like, I mean, even against, you know, Seton Hall, I want to say it was, I'll pull it up so I'm, you know, not talking out of my ass completely. They forced 15. Most of those were in the last quarter of the game. You know, so when the other team is you know, calmed down and taking care of the ball, like Missouri has not been able to kind of, you know, get out and generate, you know, the kind of runs that they were last year. And so, like, their pace is also dragged down a bit. And I just don't think, I don't I don't think like we're seeing kind of a lot of what this team, I think we're kind of thinking they were going to be, especially when they're getting as deep into the bench as they are. They don't speed teams up.
I have a wry smile because here's a plug. I wrote about all of this and it's dropping tomorrow.
By the time you get this into your ears, it will be on the site. I believe it's scheduled to run at like 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
And I had just been looking over all this, and you're spot on all of it. It's considered an early Christmas gift from the Grinch. It's not a rosy picture, but it's some important questions nonetheless. But yes, you're exactly right. You know, Mizzou, I believe, rates 45th nationally and turning teams over, which is good. I mean, that's a very healthy number at 21% of possessions. When you look at where they were last year at this point in time, they were 26.4, which was second best nationally. You know, and you may think, well, you know, that's 40 spots, whatever. That's not that big of a deal. Just the math there, that's 5% of possessions. And in a game of 70, that's about 3.5 extra possessions they're forcing turnovers on.
Yeah.
If you consider each possession worth the other points, you know, that's 3 or 4 points a game shot. Right there. So.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons why in study hall, like I have like the total possessions and then I have, you know, the possessions minus turnovers. I just think like it's a healthy kind of look. And one of the things that Missouri always did last year and did really well was basically have more shot attempts, you know, because they knew they were going to give up offensive rebounds, but they had more possessions minus turnovers than their opponent almost every game. And that's how they were able to kind of, you know, balance it. This year, we just don't quite see the same effectiveness, I guess, is the, you know, the way to, you know, to their press. And I mean, if they don't get Illinois to turn the ball over, I don't see how they're going to beat them.
Right. No, I would agree with that. And Mizzou will turn Illinois over. It's just a matter of how much.
Yeah, is it 28% to 30% versus, you know, 21%? Right. If it's 21%, I don't know that that's enough. Like they need to really kind of get into them. What was their turnover rate last year?
In that particular game, I do not know. I'm sure it was somewhat high, but again, in that game, Mizzou was just blowing their doors off on offense, you know, not missing shots, getting everything they wanted.
Coleman Hawkins had 6 turnovers on his own.
Not a good sign.
And I think that, like, that's one of the things, because he, when Sky Clark struggled, which early in the season, Sky Clark struggled a lot. You know, even with like Epps and Harris on the floor, like they didn't really, because both those guys are a little bit more like combo guardy than they are point guardy. Like they turned to Coleman Hawkins as a primary ball handler, and Missouri's like, cool, we're gonna put Kobe Brown on you, and he can defend. And sure enough, like, you know, like Hawkins just coughed the ball up left and right. You know, as soon as he was catching the ball in the backcourt. And, you know, I think that kind of led to a lot of the momentum that Missouri had. Is there a mark that you think that they need to get to turnover rate wise to, in order to kind of, you know, be competitive and possibly win?
You know, it's such a hard question to answer.
They were 24.6% last year.
I mean, if Mizzou did that again this year, that would be good. But I just, you know, from game in, game out, and especially in this particular game with this environment, this matchup, I just don't know what to expect. You know, does Mizzou come out, shoot the ball well, defend as well as they have in the past? You know, if they do those things, they don't need an incredibly high turnover rate to win. But realistically, I mean, yeah, you're looking at a quarter possessions. You know, if you're doing that, I think Mizzou has a shot. Assuming other things are going well, you know, if they're giving up uncontested layups on the other 75%, then it really isn't going to matter a whole lot. But yeah, it's going to be a major point of the game, I think.
Well, so according to KenPom, there is no line out yet. It is a projected 10-point loss. That is a significant difference. 79-69 is the projected score. After that, Missouri takes a week off and comes back home to play Central Arkansas, who's currently 335th in KenPom, before they open SEC play the next week. So we really don't have a whole lot of basketball happening over the next few weeks. We have Illinois Friday, the following Saturday, Central Arkansas, the following Saturday, Georgia, and then they make a road trip to Rupp Arena. So hopefully things are going well for Missouri football, or continue to go well, I guess, because honestly, like, it's difficult because they played on the 9th, they lost. It was disappointing. They played again on the 17th and lost, and now they're going to play on the 22nd. And then you have a whole other week before you play basketball again. And, you know, very clearly they should beat Central Arkansas. Obviously, you know, the Jackson State loss is disappointing. Jackson State is 255 in KenPom. Some of that was aided by Missouri. But 335 is much worse. But Central Arkansas still had that guy. I had to, like, went into the transfer portal, and I think he went back.
I'm going to guess yes, just because that doesn't sound surprising in 2023.
Well, I think there was a guy, I want to say it was Central Arkansas. I don't recognize any names, so maybe he got hurt or something. There was a guy who, and he went on a visit to Arkansas. He listed Missouri in, like, his top three with, like, Butler. And then committed to Butler.
Was that? I don't remember. But I mean, we're talking 9 months ago
in Arkansas. Yeah.
I know there was a
Cameron Hunter.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah,
Cameron Hunter. Yeah, he hasn't played yet this year.
Huh? Maybe he has to sit out because of transfer.
Maybe, yeah. I don't see his name in any on the KenPom page. But yeah, so kind of going back to my point, not a lot of basketball to play over, you know, the next, you know, the last couple weeks and into the next couple weeks. Yeah, there's a possibility of going through this, you know, this four game stretch before conference play, thinking that you could possibly get to, you know, just go 2-2 or possibly, you know, 3-1. And then you're feeling really good of making up for that Jackson State loss. It comes down to bragging rights now as the only sort of win out of those three. And then Central Arkansas. So I don't know, like I'm ready for bragging rights. I'm really curious how it's going to go. I don't want to sound negative. Like I'm still very positive over the Dennis Gates era. I just kind of, this feels like it's gotten a little bit away from them. I don't like what they're doing rotationally. Like, you know, like not having, you know, Caleb Grill, who I think had sort of figured out his role right before he got hurt. Yeah. Like it's, you know, John Tonji just, he was minus 16.
Yeah.
Against Seton Hall. Like,
I mean,
if Dennis Gates doesn't play John Tonji, does Missouri win that game?
I mean, probably not. Well, I don't know how many minutes he played. I know it wasn't many, but
I don't think he played any in the, like, in the second half. I feel like he just wasn't very good. And yeah, I don't know that I have a whole lot else.
I know he didn't play late when they were coming back, so he didn't get the benefit of that that run under his belt. You know, but you're right. This year, I wouldn't say had great expectations. I remember we talked in one of the podcasts earlier about the whether it was a direct quote or a general feeling about Final Fours and whatnot. And I was like, let's kind of pull back a little bit. You know, I think this team has the capability to be good, but we need to see how it all comes together. Because, I mean, yeah, last year I was a pretty big believer in Mizzou being a quality team coming into the season. I think I might have been, at least among the non-Rock M Mizzou faithful, might have been seen as a little bit of an optimist in that. And, you know, had you told me that Isaiah Mosley would have went down, or not went down, just went out early in the year, I probably wouldn't have been as optimistic. But you know what? The team meshed really well. They did things much better than I could have ever expected, and they had a great year. So you just don't know until you see it. And even after you see it, you don't know until you see it multiple times. And, you know, we're 11 games in the season now, so we've seen it and we kind of know what we're dealing with at this point. And I don't think John Tonje is going to morph into an all-conference player all of a sudden. I think he's a very talented player. I think he would help this team if he was whatever lingering issues from his foot injury and his reacclimation to the lineup, whatever is preventing him from doing that. If you took that away, I think he helps. I think he definitely helps. I think Caleb Grill helps. But at this point, you can't really count on them to be those guys that you expected them to be for various reasons. So, you know, it's a little disappointing between the, especially the Jackson State game and last Sunday when they frankly no-showed for about 20, 25 minutes of the game. So, you know, I understand why there's some trepidation going into bragging rights and heading into the conference schedule, but, you know, you just don't know. I think there is a distinct divide between the non-conference schedule and the regular season, the conference regular season. And, you know, some coaches can get their players and get their teams to buy in, like, wipe all that away. It's a new season. You can go win a championship and we're starting even with everyone. Some teams respond to that. I think Texas A&M responded to that, who had as bad or worse of a non-conference schedule or non-conference record than Mizzou did. So you just don't know, you know, but I don't think that is anything that's going to really lift anyone's spirits, the unknown. But that's where I stand at this point.
Well, and I feel like there's a sense of disappointment, you know, with the team so far this year, and not just like, you know, you and me and Matt Harris, who obviously talk a lot, you know, but just seeing comments online and mm-hmm. You know, and just the sort of general enthusiasm, you know, around posts about basketball seems to be like down a little bit. And I don't necessarily think that that's, like, I think it's reflective of a couple things. One, the football team having an absolute standout season. You know, very clearly, like, as the guy who's been running the site now for several years, like, I know which side of the bread is buttered. You know, football is always number one in the United States. And that's fine. So I think if anything, like, it's allowed, you know, Missouri basketball and some of their struggles to fly under the radar a little bit. I think fans are still very excited about Dennis Gates. I think fans mm-hmm. are really excited about the recruiting. And there now seems to be a sense of like, well, okay, maybe the season isn't going to be as fun as last year, but we have good recruits, we have a coach we like, you know, that's enough for me to just sort of be like, all right, like, this doesn't have to be a great season. I still contend that as somebody who is a passionate basketball fan, like, I just want to see this team get better.
Agreed.
And like, I want to see them do the things that they aren't doing very well. I want to see them do better. I want the scouts to come out looking better. I want the team to look, you know, more and more prepared with each week. Because I think like that's also part of my disappointment so far this year is I don't know outside of, you know, really the 3-week stretch of or three game stretch of Pitt, Wichita State, and Kansas where I felt like the team was prepared. I was really encouraged by how they played at Kansas because they were not intimidated by the environment. Right. And I liked that. And then they just come out and they look like the same team that struggled against Loyola and South Carolina State and Jackson State. I just want to see less of that and more of like Pitt and Kansas.
Yeah, I found it kind of interesting that at least so far that Mizzou is, in my opinion, played some of their best games on the road. Granted, they found themselves down 19 against Minnesota, which is exactly a spot you want to be. But they did rally very well. They tried to do it again this this past Sunday and couldn't quite pull it off. But, I mean, between that, Pittsburgh, and, you know, even the game at Kansas, it's like I would probably consider that their third or fourth best performance of the year. They lost. They didn't shoot well. Well, I shouldn't say they didn't shoot well. They didn't score well. Part of my critique was that they shot the ball plenty well from outside. They just didn't shoot enough. But they didn't score enough. We'll put it that way. 7-364. They defended reasonably well. It took Bill Self multiple adjustments with his game plan to get the shots that they needed to win. And we mused while watching the Indiana game that they were missing just hordes of 10 footers against the Hoosiers, but they made virtually all of them against Mizzou. You know, but that's going to happen. It not faulting anyone for that. but at least you saw Mizzou put the game to Kansas, and Kansas have to respond as the better team at home and come out and change what they were initially trying to do to match what you were doing. And right. Once they did that, they were able to execute just enough to pull away somewhat comfortably, you know, but there was nothing that faltered or nothing that fazed Seton Hall last weekend. And that's probably the most disappointing aspect of it. So anyway, you know, I agree. I think Mizzou had been looking better and last weekend calls that into question, but you know, it's basketball. My high school coach was adamant that football is a passionate game. Basketball is not. Maybe that's why I like it so much. It's you know, you got to move on to the next play. There's no time to stomp your feet or get too high, get too low after a possession, because you got to go back and get to the other end of the floor. And I kind of look at that from game to game. It's a long season. There's 31 plus games that you're playing. And if you allow it to carry over from one to the next, you're beat. So, you know, we'll see how they respond this week. And who knows, a big win against Illinois could change a lot of things. If they come out and get a 20 piece drop down on it, it might not be so rosy for Christmas, but we'll see. That's why they play the games.
Yeah. It's weird how your opinion of the team changes game to game based on what they did last. Yeah, so I think you and I are going to get out of here. We'll see what happens, Bragging Rights. I will be back next week, probably post-Christmas, to talk about Bragging Rights and preview the Central Arkansas Bears. I want to say it's the Bears.
I think you're right. Not 100% sure. I'm not even sure what conference they play in, if I was being perfectly honest.
They're purple. Their colors are purple.
We need Harris here for this. He knows everything about Arkansas mascots. You know,
they are the Bears. They're based in Conway, Arkansas. And they're in the A-Sun.
Okay.
I would not have guessed that. The A-Sun.
I didn't think they were in the SWAC, but then again, I don't know what else they would have been in. So that's where I guess the SWAC or Southland, I should add both of those in there. One of those two would have been my guess.
Well, Watkins, if you are heading down to Bragging Rights, which is this Friday, I would encourage you to swing by the Central West End. There's a little restaurant there called Sunday's Best.
I've heard good news.
It is it's a kind of a cool little spot. They're doing $2 pints of Yingling Flight and the traditional lager. I'm not a huge Yingling fan, but I know a lot of people are. So you can go down there and get a cheap beer before the game. I promise you, if you order the chicken, you will not be disappointed. The chicken is fantastic. Definitely head down there. If you're a Missouri fan or an Illinois fan, you can stop by and have some delicious food at Sunday's Best. Mention to the owner that you're a Mizzou fan. I'm assuming you are if you're listening to this. And he'll talk your ear off about how excited he is about Eli Drinkwitz and all the recruits. So with that said, definitely head down there. And we will be back next week with more of this this podcast. Also head over to 573Tees. I'm just going to get all the ads out of the way here at the end. I'm going to put the link up on here. 573Tees.com/collections/rock-m. We have a Cotton Bowl t-shirt that you can pick up. And like I said, all those proceeds that we're getting are going to NIL. I think we may take a little bit, and because we are sending some guys to the Cotton Bowl game, we might reimburse some of their travel expenses. But most of it's going to NIL. So buy yourself a t-shirt. There's also the Tennessee State Champ still available. So we'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Rock M Radio, a proud partner of Fans First Sports Network. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to see more just like it beamed directly into your personal device, just click the subscribe button below. Beep. And you can find this podcast through the Apple Podcast app or for iPhone or the Google Podcast app for Android or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. We are also available on Spotify. Just search for Rock M Radio. And if you like other sports, Fans First Sports Network is a podcast network that has coverage of all other teams, Major League Baseball, MLS, NFL, whatever you want to listen and read about. It is a great, great network full of really fantastic podcasts. So look them up and subscribe to any and all of those podcasts. Rock M Radio will be back with more episodes coming soon. Thanks.